You're listening to the Castorbris podcast. My name is Christian Corley, and with me is James McLean. We're here to discuss recent events in the world of Doctor Who and see where that takes us, basically. How are you doing, James?
Call me distracted.
Okay, how are you doing, distracted?
As I said before, yeah. Yes. 1974. Borkman and Wise gag, I imagine. It feels that sort of vibe, doesn't it?
Yeah, maybe.
Call me distracted.
It's all in the delivery, isn't it?
Oh, look, it's Angela Rippon. What?
Oh, well, I mean, I'll happily talk about Borkman and Wise all morning.
No, don't, because I have no particular love of them. But it's a hot day here in podcast land. It's hard to keep focused, isn't it, on days like this?
And it can given be, that yes.
This podcast is very little focus whatsoever.
At the best of times. All right, well, let's try and be slightly more myopic. Neil Patrick Harris joins Doctor Who. That was out of the blue, wasn't it?
So was myopic. That's a sort of kind of a break from talking about Morecambe Wise. You threw me. Neil Patrick Harris, yeah.
Yeah, Doogie Howser, MD, star of How I Met Your Mother, star of stage and screen, has joined the cast of Doctor Who. And he's currently filming scenes to air in 2023 as part of the show's 60th anniversary. Just to put this into some sort of context. And I'm not actually sure if there is actually a context this can be put into, because it is a bit really, it's a bit left field, isn't it? I mean, I'm not even sure if it's left field. It's slight, well, Starfield, maybe? Starfield? I don't know. But the man himself is joining a show that stars David Tennant. Just to put everything into context, James, if we just cast our minds back over the past few years, Ewan McGregor and Hayden Christensen, Michael Keaton, now David Tennant, today Kit Harington, reprising Jon Snow. We've got Neil Patrick Harris as a Doctor Who villain that we'll, the identity of which we'll probably discuss in a moment. What's going on? There's like some really weird kind of retro recall casting, and then kind of just generally across certainly the sort of like cult fantasy TV, and then this other type of thing with mad star casting with Neil Patrick Harris. What's going on?
It depends on what you mean. It depends on what angle you're taking here. If you're sort of saying this sudden resurgence in people taking up older roles, I think there's two things that you could say are going on. I think one is that television and film is sort of shifting in its commercial paradigm and kind of working out a new way of looking at itself. And it's, put it another way, I was watching a show last night. It was a Korean show, and we were commenting on its final episode, because they tend to do blocks of 16. On the final episode, 10 minutes of it was the final encounter, and then the next 40, 50 minutes was an epilogue, essentially. And it was kind of like, yeah, it's really weird to see this. And I think it's because television being a commercial thing and film being a commercial thing, endings were never really considered that deeply. You know, once you got people into the theatres, you go, you give them the roller coaster ride, then it ends. Mm. TV show is perpetual until the money runs out and the advertising says no, and then it suddenly ends. You very rarely got that limited series approach or mini series approach where you'd have a very solid ending. So television's never, and film's never really been in this world of really thinking about how things kind of end. And where I link that in is that that's about a consumer thing. It's about as people consuming art, we like to feel fulfilled. We like to have an ending. And television, this is where the long, bear with me here. And this is where this sort of kind of comes in. So it kind of feels to me as if television and film have not given endings. And we're now in an era where television and film is recognizing there's a commercial desire for giving people what they didn't already have. So I think we kind of sort of said this before. So you're having a resurgence of old characters coming back, like Jon Snow, because people want more. They don't feel like they've had enough. And I know people will say, yeah, we've had enough of Game of Thrones, and I get that. But to a degree, it probably means that people still want more of that character. And as I say, television doesn't think about the movement on. It sort of either is continual or it just stops. And I think now we're in a position where we're looking back and going, well, maybe we didn't need to stop. Maybe we stopped too suddenly. Maybe people actually would like more of this stuff. And it's, and I think that's fitting into the commercial side. So you're seeing these returns of these characters, which Doctor Who has done before. Doctor Who's been very good at acknowledging this in its own format. And so you see David Tennant coming back. And I think because we've become so flexible with it, we can do that now in a way that perhaps 15 years ago with Doctor Who, you'd have gone, well, you can't do that unless you can fit him carefully into a current storyline. Now we perhaps don't have to do that. So, yeah, I think that's it. Neil Patrick Harris is a totally different thing, but I think that's kind of what's going on here to some degree, is we're seeing that sort of things like, yeah, actually, people, we didn't give people enough. They want more. We just stopped something. You know, we want to see more, and we can do that. And don't think television really ever thought that. Books did that, you know. I know this is very broad out, but like Conan Doyle, you know, finished Sherlock Holmes, realised people wanted more of it, and he was in a position where perhaps he needed to do more, and he disgruntledly did more. Hmm. And I think that's kind of what television's now suddenly doing, is that you don't just, you know, projects have a longer lifespan than I think television realised. Once it finishes, they move on. Now they're going, well, hang on, and film as well. You know, the Flash film, I know, obviously, there's a lot of controversy over Ezra at the moment, Ezra Miller, but it's what's propelling that is Michael Keaton coming back as Batman. It's not, that's the energy in the news feed. It's not about the Flash at all. It's about that. You know, that sort of resurgence of bringing back things which people hadn't finished with, they hadn't had enough of. And as I say, other media are quite good at doing that because it's easy and it's cheap. But a very commercial media, which has got a lot of money behind it, is far more tepid at sort of doing that sort of thing, I think. And now they're realising, hang on. And I think this would have worked many years ago. It's really weird that it's taken so long for television and film to work out that there's always room for, you know, a return. And it's good as Battlestar Galactica was in its revival. I think they never quite understood that you could have done the old Battlestar Galactica, and if you'd done it well and revived that, that could have had its place. People wanted that, but I don't think those people were really recognised in the face of the commercial pressures, which was to deliver something fresh and new to a new audience, which is entirely justified as well. I loved it, but yeah, anyway.
Well, we say this, it is obviously completely different because we're talking about people returning to things, but there is a rumour, an interpretation of things by Doctor Who fans and maybe observers who are less concerned about the term fan, that Neil Patrick Harris is playing a returning character. We've seen two photos of him. One is some sort of perhaps a toy maker guise, and then another in a sort of a top hat. In a completely different look. There are ideas of Celestial Toy Maker, originated by Michael Goff in Doctor Who, back in the 60s, and also the Master of the Land of Fiction has also been touted.
Mm.
What do you think? Any of those? Neither?
I don't know, it's a hard one. You could go either way. On one hand, I'd say I don't think Davis would do that, because it's a bit obvious, and I think he does like to do fresh, but it is the 60th. Yeah, and I imagine if that's a point or a time where he feels he can spoil himself a little bit and have a bit of fun, this is the time he'd do it. So I could go either way, frankly. I honestly think I'd just rather it be a new character. I don't really see any pleasures I would get out of it being the Celestial Toy Maker, unless that was massively built upon. I don't know. I'm not saying it feels disrespectful for Goff, because he's already... the audio plays replaced him, didn't they, when they did the Nightmare Fair?
Yeah.
They didn't use Goff, did they? I can't remember who they used. But I just kind of feel there's, we don't need it. But that's me. And I think it's more fun for the actor as well to be able to play something new rather than being baggaged with a character from 50 years ago, which no one will remember anyway, apart from the hardcore element, which I like, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of
5% of the people watching.
It's on a par with, in terms of villains, it feels on a par with The Great Intelligence, which was very much a Moffat sort of thing. And you can see Moffat doing that. Whereas you could never see Russell T Davies going that deeply into a long ago established and subsequently long, largely forgotten character. When he brought back the Daleks and the Cybermen and the Master, he gave them completely new spins, didn't he?
Yeah.
And St. Torrens as well, but they're the sort of the big three, big four, aren't they? They're the ones that you'd expect to see in Doctor Who, and then everything else was just completely new.
Well, that's it. And I never felt The Great Intelligence really felt like The Great Intelligence to me, just because The Great Intelligence doesn't really have that much of a idiom. It doesn't really have something, does it, that sort of defines it. It's kind of, it could have been anything. And it didn't really link that much to the past either. And it didn't have any of the things associated with The Great Intelligence in the past. So it just felt kind of like a, I'm not going to say a lazy label because I think that's rude, but it just kind of felt like a label given to something new based on something old, but didn't feel like it. I don't know. It just didn't work. But you're right. I think the problem with the Celestial Toymaker and with the Master of the Land of Fiction is I don't think they have any massive defining characteristics which propel them forward. Unless you replicate them, because the Centaurans are a replication, you know, the Daleks are a replication. The Master, to some degree, I think you can bring him back because he's had so many multiple iterations. There's a kind of understanding of what he is in relation to the Doctor. The Celestial Toymaker doesn't have that. I mean, he could be quite an interesting character. I mean, he'd be quite nice to actually just take him, put him into the Batman universe. He'd fit perfectly there. I suppose Celestial Toymaker would possibly work if it was more about the scenarios than the character. Putting the Doctor into, you know, into sort of fantasy puzzles and I don't know, maybe he'd work. I don't know. I just kind of feel like, you know, sometimes I think mining the past can be fun when it can actually bring something fruitful that the new can't. I don't think you can really replicate, you can't create a new Dalek. So I think it's good to bring the Daleks back. You know, the Master has a long-term relationship with the Doctor, so bringing him back brings that. The Celestial Toymaker doesn't really have that much to bring. And on a 60th anniversary, virtually nothing at all.
Is it a writing, and when I say writing, I mean with an R, of certain...
Oh, I see.
Certain, you know, events that have happened. Is this a way to steady the ship?
What do you mean? Does that have some sort of context to the larger world building?
Yeah.
Or re-world building?
Rebuilding, yeah.
Could do. It'll be interesting to see how they play with the re-world building, so I'm sure there will be some. And it's kind of funny because the Flux could have been perfect for that. And obviously that's been totally forgotten. But it could be. Yeah. I mean, it's a weird thing. And it's the beauty of fiction. It's the beauty of these debates. I mean, you can do things right. You can do things wrong. You can bring the Celestial Toymaker back as a new character with no real reference to the past, apart from he knows the Doctor, and give him a totally new spin. And that might work. You know, that might be a really powerful thing. As you say, it could be something rich configures an entire series, the leading of illusions, puzzles, tricks, and all sorts, which are really exciting. But they kind of did that with Gareth Roberts' one in the Sarah Jane Adventures, the Trickster, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Which felt very old school, but was a brand new thing. And I think that kind of worked. If that had turned around and gone, actually, I'm a reincarnation of the Celestial Toymaker or something, you'd be like, I come from the land of fiction. You go, oh.
The land of fiction. Yeah. It's on the same. And I suppose, Steve Lyons did a great job with the land of fiction, didn't he, back with in the 90s in the Virgin New Adventures conundrum.
That's true. He did. That was excellent.
Yeah. I remember that was one of the funniest things I'd read in a long time when I was reading that. It was, in fact, it was, I think that was the funniest story I'd ever read. Every other funny book I'd ever read was like non-fiction, like The Meaning of Life or How to Be a Complete Bastard and things like that. That, apologies for the language there.
Yeah. I don't remember the... it's a title, you can't apologise. I don't remember it being making me laugh, but I remember enjoying it. And I think maybe because it's, books obviously have a prose element to it, which television can't. Maybe that sort of idea works better in book, where you can play with it in several ways. You can play with it in language as much as you can, yeah, visuals or story. And I think that's possibly why it works. I think it would seem a bit, unless it was very clever, I think Land of Fiction on television, which itself is a land of fiction, I think now it would just would work. I mean, even now, I mean, I must admit, I'm not a massive fan of the Mind Robber. I think it's gloriously overrated, apart from episode one and maybe and the final episode five. And that's because you're doing something really quite obvious. You're just playing with tropes, which everyone knows. And I think maybe now, in a world which is extremely postmodern and meta, I'm not sure it could give anything which hasn't been done better.
Well, I think the two most memorable things about the Mind Robber are almost obviously recasting Fraser Hines for a few episodes and Zoe's bottom on the TARDIS, yeah, and the rest of it kind of is forgettable.
Yes, well done. You've managed to win the middle-aged man award there.
Oh, come on. You know, every single clip of that story is, you know, based around those two things, almost certainly. Whoever's putting it together.
Well, I'm sorry, but, you know, you saucy people aside, as nerds, remember it for the destruction of the TARDIS and the borrowing of monster outfits from another show because they were having to fill a gap in their story schedule. That's how we remember it. You might want to remember it for the posterior of someone lying uncomfortably and possibly damaging a prize prop with her button scrabbling arms as she's trying to hold on tight to it and scream. All as nerds remember the little vent flapping a little bit as she scrabbles against it on the side of the console.
That's
how I remember.
All right, okay. I
know what you mean. It is very true. That is a trope which you do see every time that shows. But, and they knew what they were doing then, and they know what they're doing in the clip shows. Yeah. Totally, anyway. Totally.
Just to recap, just to backpedal slightly, when you mentioned the recasting of the Michael Gough character, Celestial. Try and make it. It was David Bailey who played Dask in Ropes of Death.
David Bailey. And in Ropes of Death. David Bowie type. He always reminded me of Bowie in that. He had a sort of Bowieism about it.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, and he was in a lot of the Pirates of the Caribbean stuff as well, and along with many other TV and movie roles over the years. So Neil Patrick Harris, David Tennant running around Bristol. It's a bit crazy. You wouldn't have, you know, if you even 12 months ago, if you said, oh, David Tennant's going to be back in Doctor Who next year with Doogie Howser, MD. What are you talking about? What have you taken? Have you overdosed? What was it? Was it coffee?
I'm really hoping this is going to be a far more fresh approach than we've had before, than I'd expect with either Chibnall or Moffat. I'm hoping that, you know, that I don't know, that this will be very left field.
I just...
that it's not...
Well, it has the buzz that Doctor Who hasn't had in a very long time. And it as long as it feels exciting and fresh and grips you for 45 minutes, and then you realise where did that 45 minutes go, 60 minutes go at the end of it, then I think it's done the job, hasn't it?
Well, I'm just thinking, like, you know, I remember when the Day of the Doctor, which was very popular, but it was very much like, it was very traditional. You know, it starts off with a Smith tale of him being taken to UNIT in a ridiculous way and, you know, bobbing around the museum and then finally bumps into his past self and then there's the whole band and everything. And I just kind of don't want it to do that. I would almost like it just to be something with Tennant. Not because I'm a massive Tennant fan, but just because I think it'd just be interesting just to sidestep all those common tropes of bringing back old established doctors and doing something different. you know, if Shooty's in it at all, I don't know, or Jodie, I don't know. But, you know, I kind of like the idea of just, you know, pushing it aside. And, you know, it reminds me a bit of like the whole sort of idea of, you know, Love of Monsters and Blink and Midnight, those approaches that Davis would do when he would just kind of push everything in a different direction to where the show's momentum would normally take it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I'm hoping for. But we'll see. But yeah, it's exciting times. And like you said, all these characters across media being revitalized and older actors being more comfortable at revitalizing them. Obviously, we've got Philip Glenister and John Sim for Life on Mars and potentially other cast members from that too. That's exciting. And I'd say Keaton as Batman to me is very exciting. As we've said before, the whole Maguire Garfield thing was great. You know, we want to see these people come back. We want to see them. There's something invigorating in seeing characters re-established, and I don't know if that's just because it's great to see how characters sort of progressed, or if it's just like a reunion, or whether sometimes it's just nice to feel for the actors who didn't get to pursue them as perhaps far as they would like to come back. And maybe in the case of Jon Snow, I didn't know, I didn't hear this. Maybe it's also trying to redeem the memory of that character, which has been pretty much blighted by its finale.
Yeah, maybe, you may be right. A couple of things to quickly mention before we get into a deeper conversation. First of all, and it's kind of appropriate because we were talking about the 60th and then we were talking about the 50th. And at the time of the 50th, do you remember this? I was invited on the radio and to take part in a documentary.
I have limited memory of most things, even companion posteriors, apparently, so I'll take your word for it.
Okay, so you, the long-running listener may recall this because I was propositioned by a woman of the night outside the BBC studio. It's come back to him. Anyway.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, so it was that was a thing that I took part in called the TARDIS on Teesside. Now, I've had a look for it, and you can't find it in any kind of a legitimate way online. But the gentleman who produced, who recorded and produced and hosted the show, Bob Fisher, he's left the BBC, but he does a very cool show on Mixcloud called The Haunted Generation. And it's the number one at the present time. It's only episode 7, and he's made number one in the global Mixcloud soundtrack charts. And it's basically a show in which he talks a little bit and then plays sort of music from the 1970s, but it's not like chart music from the 1970s. It's sort of things like songs from Playaway albums and things like that, and Dudley Simpson soundtracks and things like that. It's a very interesting show. It's worth listening to. I'm not sure how often it comes out. Sorry, go on.
I say, you nerds, all that whole thing happening back then 10 years ago, all you remember is this stupid radio show that you're on, while the rest of us, saucy people, remember you being propositioned. That's our memory. That's where our memory sticks.
So anyway, check that out because it's worth listening to, and I'll put it in the show notes. And just one other thing, the season 23 Blu-ray collection has got one of the most astonishing collections of PDFs. And that's kind of, people are receiving that now. So just do, if you haven't ordered it already, you should check this out. The PDF archive on it is immense. There's all sorts, from draft scripts and rehearsal scripts. There's even the scripts of Slipback and various other things. Sales sheets, audience reaction reports. All.
Here's a question for you. This is off the bat. Something we never really talked about. One of the things I've found quite interesting, obviously, with these releases, which I'm sure you'd find interesting if you weren't so saucy, is the films, the trailer stuff that they do, where they do these sort of semi-canonized little pieces to promote the material. Like I was watching the season 24 one the other week with Bonnie Langford doing the playing off as one of the judges on the sort of Dragon's Den.
Dragon's Den, wasn't it? Yeah.
And, you know, again, and obviously more recently, more topically, there's the Ace one where she is running the charitable donation, charitable enterprises, which links kind of to her book and potentially might link to the next series. And I'm kind of wondering, that's kind of an interesting space where the Perry one's really good as well. Perry one's really, and they're kind of interesting because obviously they're promotional material. And they're played as promotional, they're played very meta. But at the same time, they do give a sort of very quite comforting responses to people left behind by the show, characters left behind by the show, and a sort of revisiting and a feeling of where they could be. And I'd be really interested to know from the listener, certainly, do they see them as canon themselves? You know, do they canonize them in their own head as ways of thinking of where Perry was after Mind Warp, which was obviously quite a distressing end for the character potentially. You know, where Ace was. I mean, how do you buy into those, or do you just see them as sort of, you know, promotional fluff?
I see them as promotional fluff. I don't really like them, to be honest with you. I don't know. I never really... Was I supposed to take them seriously? I didn't realise that. I don't know then. Well, what about you? Do you? Is it canonical to you?
There's a weird bit in sort of world thinking, I like to call it, and I say I like to call it because I have just called it, and that is what I'm going to call it.
World thinking?
This idea of world thinking, yeah. It's like world building.
Okay, I was thinking world but food, but go on.
But it's about, it's far more important than it's about how specifically about in that sort of, in those sort of world views that you can have, which is a coin I have co-opted that is out there, these sort of world views, how we think about them and how we sort of navigate them in ourselves. Because, you know, a lot of worlds aren't, well, most worlds are not complete in the sense that we'd like them to be. I mean, a lot of people get very upset if we say dimensions in time. that is, in theory, part of that world, but just people like to navigate it around it. Exactly. And so world thinking is kind of like kind of how we navigate around our thoughts of those worlds, how we sort of put it together. And the reason I was using it is, like, I agree with you. There's bits of, say, those things which are just too on the nose to really work as canon. But in some ways... Can your world sort of think of them as being the roots of what happened to those characters without them being explicit? So, you know, it sort of suggests that Mel went on to sort of, I mean, in that one is Silly, her character juice and enterprise. Would that be the sort of thing that she'd do? Would she, because she went off with Glitz, would she end up sort of creating a space in the universe, a business that works for her? Because whether we liked her or not, she was obviously positioned in the show as someone whose way of thinking challenged and helped other people. So could that be what her outcome is? You know, obviously Ace is more easy to do because there's a lot more work that sort of suggests that's what happened to her, that she ran a company to help others. Taking elements of those, sort of seeing them in their age, seeing them in their position, in the context of those sets, you know, seeing Perry talking about her past, but then perhaps extracting those bits I don't like, you know, the Dragon's Den approach of it being people related to her stories, or, you know, the... I don't know. I think they kind of have a weird value. But like Dimensions in Time, do you have to mediate them a little bit to... and modify them and shape them in your own head to make them work? Because we do it all the time with Doctor Who. It's how we excuse there being a camera on in the chase, sitting in the jungle, or, you know, a really bad backdrop to a doorway, you know, that someone walks through, which is clearly a painting. You know, things like that. You know, we do it all the time.
Well, I think we can. It depends, doesn't it? I think it depends on context and things like that. I mean, so something like what you just described, from the 1960s, that was watched on a sort of an 8-inch TV. That wasn't in any shape or form what we would call crisp. You know, it doesn't have the sharp lines and definition of high definition or even sub-high definition. It's just a tiny screen that's quite messy at times. I think you can get away with stuff then. I think you can accept that context. Things that, like these are created in modern times. And I don't know. I think, as you say, they are a bit on the nose, and they do... I struggle to accept them as anything other than promotional fluff. Is the Fourth Doctor talking to a disembodied voice and then forgetting the conversation prior to... I don't know, was it the Key to Time season or maybe the season after that?
Hmm.
Is that canon or not? Well, it doesn't really matter because he forgot and it's completely inconsequential, so... I don't know.
This is what I mean.
Yeah.
It's funny because I think if we were back in the 90s where there was no Doctor Who, these things would perhaps be take it with as with a little more enthusiasm than maybe when we have so much quality narrative and media that they don't. But in an era when, you know, you'd be looking to see whether the latest downtime or, you know, I mean, things like, I can't remember what it was called, Showtime, wasn't it? The Santarin. Was it Showtime?
Shakedown.
Showtime. I'm getting old.
Yeah, Showtime. You think of Michael Keaton again?
I'm thinking of I don't know, burlesque, saucy thing, probably. definitely not what Shakedown was, but that was, you know, that was as much as you'd get, and you'd go, yeah, this is based on the, this would be based on the New Adventures novel. It's linked to it, and we can now look at these two, and this is connected to Doctor Who, but technically it's not officially, and we, you know, but we will take it, and we'll see it as canon in our head because it's new and fresh, and there's nothing else out there.
Yeah.
But now we can sort of go, Big Finish, probably canon. I don't listen to it much. I don't, you know, there's that sort of attitude. Well, you didn't get that in the 90s. You know, Big Finish was as canon as you really wanted it to be because you had nothing else.
Do you know, I was thinking about the 90s earlier.
Were you?
Well, I say earlier. I think about it at least once a day.
Well, like in the 90s, you were thinking about it a lot.
Well, it comes up in brain conversation quite often. And in terms of Doctor Who, I was thinking, you know, with David Tennant coming back to Doctor Who, this is like, you know, in terms of periods of time that have passed, it's like Tom Baker coming back in the 90s, isn't it?
Yeah. He ended 2008.
Yeah.
2008, so 14 years.
14 years. Yeah. It's going to be 15 years when we see him, so.
So almost close to him popping back to do the McGann.
Yeah. It's crazy,
just by
isn't
a couple of years.
It is crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, yes, it's crazy and a scary world when you start looking at it like that. I mean, I've been reading a few people on Twitter saying how they've been enjoying. There was one saying that they'd been watching Doctor Who from the beginning all the way through until they just got to the end of McCoy, and how much they'd enjoyed that run. I don't know their age. I don't know whether they were around when it was first out or not. But I kind of, that's one thing I've never done. I think either you or Brian was trying it once. Or was it you or Brian? Or was it someone else entirely? I don't know. People are so sane to me. But this idea of going through from the beginning and just...
I think I may have tried it, but we didn't get very far through the
Daleks. I love the idea of it. I think the problem is that when you've watched so many out of orders and say, like, with Seeds of Death, I've been watching since, you know, the 80s.
Yeah.
I don't know whether I get a stumbling block when I get to one that I've seen so many times. But the idea of just watching it as a sort of lived-in experience, the Doctor in continuity, is kind of exciting. And to see those changes as they progress and as you go through them.
I've done seasons on their own quite regularly, but never. I don't think I've... No. If I have attempted it, I didn't get very far.
Because we have with the new series, because we are obviously younger than the old series. So the new series, we got to watch from its beginning and follow that journey. And I think that's, in my head, it's kind of interesting that I have a continuity to the new series, which I, in a way, don't have so fully with the old, because the old has always been, a lot of it's been retrospective.
Yes.
You know, Tom Baker backwards, for me, was retrospective, a lot of it. And picking what I can in shreds and as it's grown over the years, the catalogue. But I never got the experience of following it from William Hartnell and experiencing the Daleks for the first time, and then, or experiencing with him the Daleks the first time in a weird way, then moving on and through all the missing stories that we have now into Patrick Troughton, and then that's the shift and change into Pertwee and how that must have felt suddenly in colour. And then, you know, Robot and Tom Baker comes along, and there's sort of moments of real flashes of something fresh, and there's also awkwardness and thinking, oh, is this guy going to work? And never had any of that. I wonder what that's like.
I don't suppose.
And the same for the new series as well. People coming to the new series for the first time, having not seen the old series and having their sort of mind to some degree, not blown probably, but just like, whoa, this is different. And following that as their... What I'm saying is that we're the unlucky ones.
I don't know.
Us middle-aged guys, we ended up being in the middle. We didn't get the beginning of the first lot. And when the new lot came along, we already had some experience to compare it to.
Well, you say we didn't get that. You say, are we the unlucky ones? And maybe I can only base this on my nieces, but my nieces abandoned Doctor Who in 2015. And they're only interested in it again now because they've seen David Tennant. So they didn't like Peter Capaldi's Doctor. They didn't like Jodie Whittaker's Doctor. There's no interest in the show whatsoever. David Tennant, who was there when they were children, young children, because they're like 17, 16 now. And now they're interested in the show again. And I think that's kind of interesting.
This goes back to what we were saying at the beginning. And this is where I think there's perhaps the generational thing is tapping into TV and film, where they're kind of seeing, as I say, this more long game.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily generations of ages, but like people who remembered Tobey Maguire when they were 15 and they were brought up on Spider-Man, they revisit that 15-ness by seeing him again in this new context and not in a fresh new Tom context. And the cat is not about... I think what television is kind of realising is not simply the templates that people want to revisit. I don't know why it's taken them so long to work this out, but they want to revisit the characters. They want to revisit the characters, and for them, the characters are in part the actors. And keeping the same actor carries the age, which gives the feeling that that character has had experience and life, and that character becomes even more real. And I think that is exciting too. And going to Tennant, I think that's why it'll be important with Tennant, how they play it. Because if it's just like an alternate universe Tennant, as Brian was possibly hypothesizing, that carries a little less flavour, I think, for an audience. I think the audience wanted to be somehow their Tennant, whether it's almost like a degeneration or something. They need to feel that connection because that's what's important. You know, when Keaton comes back to Batman, you want to feel it's his that Keaton that we knew, not an alternative version of Michael Keaton. So you want that connection. You want to revisit that friendship. Because that's how I kind of feel. When I see characters come back, I remember Final Fantasy VII's Advent Children DVD when I watched that, and I was really quite choked by seeing these people return, these characters that I'd seen in this video game. They meant something to me. You can't, that feeling is so, Bill and Ted. Yeah, that was a joyous experience to see them return. And I think we're tapping, the shows are tapping into that.
So it's nostalgia, isn't it?
As well. Yeah, there's a mixture of nostalgia, but it's also about being in the present, because you're not wanting just to revisit a past time. You want to see, as I think one of the reasons the Indiana Jones film, The Crystal Skull, failed, was because Indiana Jones didn't really feel like he had changed. And I think what people want to see, they see these characters as friends, and as they've got older, they want to see the character has aged as well and changed, because they want to feel he's real, not just a caricature. So to have him sort of doing exactly the same things as he was doing, 15, 16 years before, just didn't cut it. You needed to feel that he was a person, and by that person, he would have new difficulties. And I think that's really key to it all. And I think that's probably what's drawing actors back as well, because that is interesting. If you're not too worried about the typecasting, you've got your career set, going back to these characters in a new, where they're like Picard, that was Patrick Stewart's point, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to go back to being captain of the Enterprise, but I will come back to revisit the character as an old man like me. That's interesting to me. And I think that's what's engaging. I mean, it still blows my mind, as I've said on this podcast before, that Paul Robinson from Neighbours has been there since he was in his early 20s. He's now in his late 60s or whatever, or mid-60s. That's incredible. That character has existed almost as long as the actor.
Yeah.
Ken Barlow is mind-blowing as well.
Well, that character's he's the almost daddy as old of it, as the actor.
It? Yeah. Absolutely.
But the character's not as old as the actor, though, is he? The character's 10 years younger than the actor.
I suppose in that sense, yes. Yeah. I didn't know that nuance.
But that aside, yeah, I know what you're saying, yeah.
I mean, you soap nerds obviously have far more understanding of these saucy characters like Ken Barlow, who's been around the block a few times, isn't he? I remember those times with Deirdre Barlow when he was having his affairs when I was young. I was shocked. It was with Mike Baldwin as well.
It was, yeah, of all people.
Yeah.
Who, of course, in Coronation Street was the uncle of Bradley Walsh's character, which brings us back to Doctor Who nicely.
Okay. If we must, we will go back to Doctor Who, yeah. But as I said, I think what is interesting in Doctor Who is that it's been, as we said in the last few weeks of doing this podcast, it was kind of doing all these sort of things subconsciously before it really sort of became a true thing. Mm. You know, the return of a previous Doctor we've been doing since 72. So we've been doing it for many, many years, and that's kind of splendid in its own way.
I mean, that brings us to the end of our chat for this week. And if you have any thoughts, and if you particularly of what James was questioning about the trailers with Mel and with Perry and with Ace and their respective doctors for the DVD releases, if you have any thoughts about those and whether you feel that they're canonical or not, I suspect the latter. You know, let us know on Facebook, and we will.
Or do you canonise them in different ways? Could they be existing within the land of fiction? You know, those setups, could they exist, but not within the real world? Maybe they've been taken out of time and space. I don't know.
Maybe any of those things. Let us know. We'll be back for a new show soon. Until then, it's goodbye.